Happy hour! Welcome to it, a special edition of the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour this afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, there's a Hall of Famer just
popping
into the studio. Great to see you, buddy. 63 degrees here at 5:07 on a mid-December afternoon, and it's exciting time. Thanks for joining me today. Last Friday, we tried to wrangle the former director of intercollegiate athletics and vice president and an author, Fred Glass, the program. We had a scheduling conflict, no problem. But guess who's with us this afternoon, Smitty? Live on the telephone.
Fred G. Glass.
Good afternoon, my friend. How are you? Welcome to the program.
Excellent. Thanks for giving me a mulligan on that. You were very kind to describe it as a scheduling error, but it was my whiff. I did a presentation to the Kelly School, and I was so relieved after it was over. I thought, it's weekend time, and totally spaced your generous opportunity to be on. So thanks for letting me come back on, guys. I really appreciate it.
The best thing is, Red, you're with us tonight. That's all that matters, my friend. How you doing?
It's always good to be with you guys. I'm awesome, man. It's really good to reconnect with you guys. I see Joe once in a while. Mike, I haven't seen you as much. It's always fun to see you at games and out and about. So thanks for having me on and reconnecting. It's good to hear your voice.
Well, how is civilian life? Have you been to many games where you can just sit back and kind of take in all the things that you helped build over a long time? We'll get to the book here in a minute, but how is that different not being quote-unquote in uniform on game day?
I gotta tell you, man, it's good to be back to just being a fan. I was always a fan when I was AD. I was a fan and the AD. Now I really do like being a fan. Sort of to your point, you know, I go to a football game and I don't have to reach my pocket for my 3x5 card to see where am I supposed to be next. I can be wherever I want, which is usually drinking beer and sloppy joes out in the parking lot. So I like it. I loved being AD. I loved it every day. I loved it till the last day. And I miss the people. I miss the kids a lot. But I the job itself, it was time for me to move on, so I don't miss that. But still watch the Hoosiers and, you know, go to the games. When I'm not at the games, I'm watching them on TV.
Well, Tom Allen had a big recruiting national letter signing day today, and we got 7 transfers coming in, joining 18 high-quality men, and that is a good point as we move forward to 2022. Good news there. You know, Fred, I remember the very first time that I interviewed you, it was during halftime of an Indiana basketball game early January. You'd just taken the job, and it 11 and a half years later, enough said, your legacy speaks for itself. But I know at that particular point you talked about connecting with the kids and your relationships with the student athletes, and really that was what Fred Glass during his tenure was all about here.
Well, I appreciate you suggesting that, Joe. And I remember that trip well. I took my son, Joe, with me to my very first trip. And then we leave, and we're on our little plane, and there's ice all over it. And I'm like, didn't Buddy Holly go down in Iowa? I mean, I thought, I just got this gig, and I'm thinking I'm going to end up like the Big Bopper or something, you know. So that trip is etched in my brain. But I would like to think that to the extent there's legacy, it's connecting with the kids and being student centered. I hope that I was a coach centered AD as well, because I think they're the secret to your success. You can have all this other stuff you want, and you need it. You need buildings and programs and all that. But man, the coaches are what drives your success, and I think we've been blessed to have a cadre of really, really strong coaches.
Well, you know, it's interesting you talk about building, Fred, because it is kind of chicken and egg, and for a while there you had a chicken that wasn't laying any eggs, but now when you sit back and have a cold one and look up at halftime, well, there's the north end zone that was completed under your watch and finalized, and the south end zone and all the performance centers and mental health and physical health and academics. Yeah, we know coaches are important, but having the facilities, that wasn't the case when you first took over. That has to be awfully satisfying to see that project come to fruition.
Yeah, Mike, I got to admit it was. I mean, you know, I've said this before, that when I came back as AD in January of 2009, the physical plant, the facilities of athletics looked a lot like they did when I left as a senior in 1981. And until you get around the Big Ten, you didn't realize how out of whack we were. And I think we were losing kids because of that. We were losing coaches because of that. We were losing games because of that. And, you know, we invested almost a third of $1 billion in rebuilding the infrastructure of IU Athletics. I am proud of that. I don't think there's a sport that we compete in that we're not competitive facility-wise. And so, yeah, it does come down to people and coaches, but they can't spin straw out of gold. I mean, you've got to have the facilities and programming and salaries and so forth to support them. And I think that's what we focused on, you know, in the 11 years or so that I was there.
You know, you focus, too, on 24 sports, one team, and that concept is carried through and will for as long as I'm doing my job with Indiana University and being, on local sports here in Bloomington. That was so key. It's carried through, and it always will.
Well, I appreciate that, Joe. You know, it's hard to think now about where we were in 2009. You know, we weren't that far away from Coach Knight being fired and how divisive that was and the awful death of Terry Heppner from glioblastoma. And then the reason I was there, a major infractions case involving our, you know, premier sport and five athletic directors in 8 years. And so in addition to needing to rebuild the infrastructure like we talked about, I felt like we need to rebuild the culture because the department was beaten down and they didn't even realize it because of what was normal for them. So we're trying to create a esprit de corps, 24 sports, one team was central to that. What became the spirit of Indiana, the student athlete bill of rights. And I think we, in addition to rebuilding the facilities, we rebuilt the culture, and that was a team effort. But I think we stand on much more firm ground now, a rebuilt foundation from which hopefully we can pursue bigger and better things.
You know, Mike talked about the North End Zone and what have you, and, you know, the Excellence Center academically with the people running it. We're seeing the dividends. We're seeing 134, for instance, of our fall athletes, academic, all Big Ten, which means 3.0 GPA or higher. 39, by the way, a new record set by the football team. So congrats out to Tom Allen in that regard. But, again, that's we can never, ever forget.
That investment's just as big.
We can never forget student is in front of athlete here.
Yeah, that's a hallmark of Indiana, right? I mean, that was part of our foundation way before I got there, and that's a great legacy of Coach Knight and many, many others. And that's why the whole thing, with Kelvin Sampson was so devastating because we were not playing by the rules, which Indiana people pride themselves on, and we weren't caring about academics in the way we needed to, which Indiana people pride themselves on. So that was nothing new, but something we brought back. And I'm really proud of the fact that, you know, we set a record every year that I was there after the first couple for graduation success rate. That's continued. And when all is said and done, that's what it's about, giving these young men and women viable, real, non-made-up, marketable college degrees.
The Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour here on a Wednesday afternoon. The voices you hear, Fred Glass, the former director of intercollegiate athletics and vice president at Indiana University. Joe Smith, the Hall of Famer, popping in as well. I'm Mike Glasscott. Fred is live with us via the phone this afternoon. And the new book is Making Your Own Luck. We just talked a lot about, Fred, your tenure at Indiana University with all of the wonderful things of athletics. But Making Your Own Luck isn't a book just about your athletic tenure or your views of Indiana or what happened at Indiana University. It's an all-encompassing look back at your pretty cool life, man. When did you decide to be an author? How did that come about?
Well, on Father's Day 2018, Mike, my oldest, my daughter Katie, gave me a gift that was a subscription to a company that every week they would ask you a question by email and you would type out an answer. And then at the end of that year, they bind them into books and give them to different people that you want to give them to. And week by week, my daughter would see the responses that I was giving. About halfway through, she said, "You know what, Dad? I think this is more of a gift for me than it was for you," which sort of clutched me. And then when my son Connor read the book, he said he cried when he read it. And so that sort of made me feel like I had some things to talk about. And my mom always said she thought I should write a book because of kind of my jagged path, if you will. So I decided to do it. And I wrote it out by longhand on legal pads, and the long-suffering Terry Beatty, you know, deciphered it like a code breaker and typed it up for me. And it really, as you reveal the process of writing, just started to show me this idea about making your own luck. recognizing and seizing opportunities that I didn't set out to do, and I don't take a lot of credit for it. I sort of backed into it, but I thought, man, if I could lay this out for people to see and show how it played out in my life, maybe it would help people feel empowerment to take, you know, control of their lives and careers and so forth. So I hope it's a funny book. I think it's an honest book. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff of IU athletics for sure, but I hope in the end, Mike, it's a book about empowerment and people taking control their own destinies.
Talk about your growing up, Fred, and obviously, you know, I went and was the first graduating class at, as it was known then, Brebeuf Preparatory School for Boys. It changed to Brebeuf Jesuit. We added girls, I think, during your reign before you graduated. But talk about your upbringing, and, well, I know you kind of are a self-described knucklehead, but, you know, it was interesting to say the least, and it certainly you were able to draw it out in Fred Glass style, your upbringing and where it took you.
Well, thanks, Joe. You know, with the title being Making Your Own Luck, part of the point I try to make is luck isn't happenstance. Luck is where preparation meets opportunity. And I do spend a little bit of time talking about my preparation. And a little bit of my preparation is, like, earned, you know, going to IU, graduating, going to law school, graduating. But a lot of my preparation is what happened to me that I'd get absolutely no credit for. In fact, stuff I didn't like at the time. I grew up in the back of a Skid Row bar. You know, I was an only child. And my parents were at the bar. I was at the bar. And I saw a lot of crazy stuff down there. You know, met a lot of people that others might walk by as sort of vagrants or winos. I got to know them as people. I got to see my dad, you know, interact with them. I hated that at the time. But I think that learning about that has been really important to my formation as a leader and a man and a husband and a father. And then my dad's alcoholism. I'm very candid about that and what that sort of did to me, especially as an only child bearing the brunt of all that, which of course I hated and would not wish on anyone. But the reality is, I think it created a lot of empathy in me, understanding what people go through. You never know what's going on behind the white picket fence with families.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned. So part of my call, I guess, is everybody's has burdens like that, right? And a lot of us sort of run from them. I encourage people to try to embrace them and recognize that is a part of who you are, sometimes for better or worse, but often it can be transferred into better, you know, if you don't let it get the better of you.
Fred Glass is our guest this afternoon. The author, Making Your Own Luck, fred-glass.com, makes a great Christmas gift. We know that. And
yeah.
And Fred, going through the educational process you went through, getting to Indiana University, grabbing your law degree, did you know at the time that politics was the way forward, or is that something you fell into? Is that part of the luck you're talking about, or is it just the continuous networking, making connections, trying to develop that luck?
Yeah, Mike, I've always been fascinated by government politics. I always wanted to be a lawyer. I always wanted to be in government politics. You know, 12-year-old Fred really wanted to be a governor or a senator. I majored in political science. I worked on campaigns going back to walking the precinct with my mother when she was running for precinct committee woman when I was 3 years old. So she had a little kid that made doors open a little better for her. So that was a big part of my arc. You know, too much of your time, but a pivotal point of that was when I was down at IU, and I was a junior at IU late in my junior year, and I wanted to get an internship with Birch Bayh, my political hero. I go to my political science professor, Reva Chrisman, over in the student building, and I tell her, hey, I want to get an internship this summer, and she basically says, well, you're an idiot, you know, because it's March, and I was kind of an idiot back then, especially, and so I was, you know, ridiculously late for that, but she said, well, maybe you could try the fall and you know, work on his subcommittee on the Constitution, which you hold the place for, and all that. And I walked out and talked to my girlfriend. I said, I'm not doing that, you know. I had a great time at IU, but it was very much in my comfort zone. And this was pushing me out of my comfort zone. I'm like, I don't want to do that. Well, make a long story short, she pushed back, said, you ought to do that. I did do that. It was an incredible experience. It gave me a lot of confidence to pursue, you know, government politics more. And of course, that little rascal who was not supporting me in my climb back into my comfort zone, next month we'll have been married 40 years, and
yeah.
She continues to challenge me when I need it, and comfort me when I need that too. So I'm blessed. But yeah, IU was a pivotal point for me, you guys, and I took that internship, and everything I've done since, working for all these different political figures, really ties back to that internship. I'm grateful to IU for getting me that opportunity.
You know, for years I called you Prepster only because we both went to the same high school, but talk a little about the Jesuit education. They were rough on us from day one back in 1965, I'll guarantee you. I wanted to know how many jugs you received in your four-year career over at 2801 West 86th Street. Jug, it was detention, where you had to stay after school. And back in the day, it wasn't easy. You had the Zionsville bus, the blue and white Zionsville bus, to get you downtown and then back to the west side. So being jugged wasn't up my alley, but I owe a lot to the Jesuits. How about you?
No, absolutely. And Mike, these jugs, these weren't like study halls, right?
No, they were not study halls.
With a teaspoon or clean the showers with a toothbrush. These were tough, and I had plenty. My dad, he went to a Cathedral High School in Indianapolis, but because he went to Marquette University, a Jesuit institution on the GI Bill for college, he really became enamored with the Jesuits and sent me to Brebeuf. And I will tell you that I don't think I really got all the Jesuit stuff when I was there. I don't know about you, Joe, but it kind of went over my head. You know, I didn't really think about that. But I think it was like tiny time pills that were put in me that, as I got into life and I saw experiences and I saw the application of it and I started studying it, Jesuit philosophy, and I'm not talking about proselytizing or religious, I'm talking about leadership and a way of proceeding. The Jesuits are geniuses, man. Yeah. St. Ignatius was a genius. And I've read everything I can get my hands on and, frankly, used a lot of that in trying to rebuild the culture at IU Athletics. And I talk a little bit about that in the book. The whole idea of having a set group of priorities is Ignatian. Cura personalis, care for the whole person, the Excellence Academy, not only helping our kids academically and athletically, but personally. I think that differentiates us from almost every other school that supports athletics. That's an Ignatian idea. The magis, the more. You may not be able to always do the most, but you can always do something, always make an effort, always try to do a little bit more, even if it's not the most. Mother Teresa said, if you can't feed 100 people, feed one person. So I actually have a whole chapter dedicated to the Jesuits and 10 of the teachings that I think are most applicable and most prominent. And I hope readers get something out of that, because it's not religious, whether you're a Catholic, not a Catholic, atheist, agnostic, whatever. It's great touchstones for a way of proceeding in life.
Hey, how many jugs did you get when you skipped school and came back to Bloomington to welcome home the, what was it, the 81 National Championship team?
It was the 76.
76.
Joe, I was a senior in 81, baby.
Hey.
I was at IU, but 76, I was at Brebeuf. And my friend Brian Brazzi, you guys may know, now the executive director of the I Association, we skipped school at Brebeuf to go out to what was then Ware Cook Airport to welcome the team back. And I think I did take a few jug lumps for that, but it was very, very much worth it.
Yeah, see, I'm senile, so that's where, you know, I forget dates anymore. But, yeah, it was the 32-0 season. So, Fred Glass joining us, former vice president director of athletics for 11 and a half solid years as part of Indiana University Athletics. His new book out, it came out, it was released. I know you and I had talked about it, Fred, in early November, and you had a chance to sit down with Indiana fans at the Rutgers football game, St. John's basketball game for book signings. How well received was it from Hoosier fans and you, the author, now?
Joe, you know, it's been great. I mean, I always followed the maxim, take your job personally, not yourself. Like Terry Heppner said, what you do is not who you are. And so, you know, when I left as AD, it was time for somebody else's turn, and I, you know, was happy to know that my stewardship had ended. But I got to tell you, the fans have been so awesome at the St. John's basketball game, at the Rutgers football game.
Mm-hmm.
So many people coming up and saying such nice things at the I did a Colts game, and so many IU fans there. We had an event at Knicks with a lot of staff and coaches. So it was very rewarding for people to say positive things. And then my publisher, IU Press, says that the book's been very successful. It's in its third printing. which was really fun because, hell, I just wanted to write it for my kids. And then when it got published, I'm like, well, that's awesome, you know. And I didn't know if it had much of an audience because a lot of it's pretty, you know, pretty personal. But I think what I've learned at these events, I'm actually getting ready to go into one here at Fort Wayne, is that I think because I was honest and vulnerable about my upbringing, I have people coming to me all the time and say, man, my dad was an alcoholic, but I don't really talk about it. Or I had debilitating anxiety attacks like I had, but I didn't talk about it. And I didn't know you kind of struggle with that stuff. So I'm glad that being honest, I think, has led people to relate to the book, and that's been very rewarding.
Fred Glass is our guest. Before we let you go, my friend, I know you've got to get ready at 5:30 for your next one. Did you fit everything in this book, or did when you got through it, did you say, heck, here comes volume two? Is there going to be a sequel? Give us an inside thought into the writer's mind.
Okay, so that's funny, Mike. I originally wanted to write the book to preserve the family stories. Okay, so I'm an only child. My mom had just passed. My dad passed a long time ago, and I know how quickly those dissipate. So I was like, I want to write the family stories. And so the first manuscript that I had was probably at least four times as long as the book that was ultimately published. And my daughter said, hey, Dad, this is great, but, like, what's it about? Which I thought was an awesome criticism dressed up like a question, you know, because it really wasn't about anything. It was like an endless Seinfeld episode where I was just wandering around and, you know, nothing, and it wasn't really about anything. But that got me to go back to the drawing board and start to recognize this idea of there were points in my life where I recognized and seized opportunities, and that made all the difference. And through that prism, I was able to edit it down. My publisher was putting pressure on me to edit it down. And that's hard. Like Stephen King calls it killing the children. When you spend all this time writing like a funny story or a movie anecdote, and you go, yeah, but it doesn't fit. You got to edit it out. That was hard. So specifically to answer your question, there was a lot left on the cutting room floor, but I think the book's better for it. I think it's focused better. And, you know, who knows? I enjoyed the process a lot, and I wouldn't doubt if maybe I figure out maybe a take on some things I ended up pulling out of this volume.
Excellent job, Fred.
Yep.
We really appreciate you being with us. We want to send everybody, just put in the Googleometer Fred Glass, and it'll take you to fred-glass.com. You can find out how to purchase the books. You can see notes from Fred, your recommended reading books, all the ways to order it. You've got the ebook and everything else that goes with this?
Yeah, there's an audio version. There's an ebook.
Ooh, did you do the voice? Who did the voice on the audio?
Well, it was strongly recommended to me that I shouldn't do it because it really takes a lot of work. So it's not my voice. I haven't actually heard it, but they've done it. And a lot of people, I'm surprised, I guess, in the way how many people buy audiobooks. A lot of audiobooks have been purchased. So I'm actually glad we made that option because people that travel or even some older readers or people have trouble, you know, with vision or whatever, are buying the audiobook, and that's been awesome.
Yeah, the precepts are incredible, especially with the video part of what you've been able to put together. Hey, you mentioned Barb and all those grandkids. It's been a great life, Fred, and we wish you nothing but happy holidays as we move to 2022 and a happy new year. And so nice of you to join us.
Thanks for your time, my friend.
This afternoon.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks so much for having me on. And I look forward to when we be together and maybe pop a cold beer or two, and reconnecting.
That's a high possibility.
That's why
there.
We get along so well. Great job. We'll let you get to your appointment, pal. Thank you so much
See
for joining
Fred.
Us.
Thanks, guys.